So it is very challenging to detect problems in large-scale internet services, because detecting some of these problems really require detailed instrumentation and continuous monitoring of such systems. However, this instrumentation is very expensive to maintain in such systems, because usually internet services involves a lot of continuously updating of their softwares, and they use a lot of open source software modules, which might not contain the correct instrumentation they need. Our idea is that, can we use the existing console logs instead of custom instrumentation to detect such problems? So console logs are those free text messages generated from the explicit log print statement in progress. Programmers love to use console logs because they are so easy to use. Whatever they want to say, they just dump that as a free text message. For that reason, console logs exist in almost every software system nowadays. However, the problem with console log is that it is not originally designed for instrumentation and monitoring. So, when the operators try to read console log, it is very hard for them to find what to look for in such logs. Even worse, because console logs are free text, it is not trivial to write a program to analyze those messages and to make sense of all of them. We want to make console logs more useful to operators, and here is a preview of our result. We start from over 24 million lines of free text messages. We automatically parse them and automatically choose a small number of abnormal log segments. And then we summarize the detection result into a single page diagram, which is easy for the operator to understand. We want to emphasize that our entire process is fully automatic, and we do not require any instrumentation or any manual input. In one sentence, what we do is we use machine learning algorithms to process console logs. You might think we are doing natural language processing, but actually we are not. Our machine learning algorithms are based on carefully designed features from the logs. So the word feature is actually a machine learning terminology, which means a numerical representation of certain aspects of the data. In this context, the data is a console log, and the aspect we want to capture from the console log is really the information in the console log, which best represents the program executions. It is not trivial to get from the free text message into this numerical representation, though. And traditionally, this involves a lot of ad hoc scripting and write a lot of regular expressions. These ad hoc scripts are difficult to write, and it completely defeats the purpose of a fully automatic analysis system. What we have done is very different. We leverage the information of the program source code and automatically generate the parser for console log. And we show that we can achieve high quality parsing results. One remaining question about machine learning is that sometimes machine learning result is very obscure to operators, especially those operators who are not familiar with machine learning. So we add an extra visualization step which transforms the detection result into some form that can be readily understood by the operators. So this four step methodology for fully automatic processing console log is our major contribution, and we validated this methodology in two real-world systems. Here we summarize some of our key insights into the log analysis problems. The first insight is that although you may think different applications generate completely different console logs, there are indeed something in common in all these logs. In the paper, we identified two of them, identifiers and state variables. And in the talk, we'll only get into details about identifiers. We found out based on this information, we can prove log messages. And our insight is that the real important information is captured by the correlations among messages within the same group. Here is an example of a correlation. And by the way, this is a simplified log segments from Hadoop file system or HDFS, and we will use HDFS logs throughout the talk as examples. Interestingly, we can see that all these three messages are simple if you look at them individually. It is really the missing received message on the right hand side column that makes that log segment abnormal. In another word, to decide whether a segment is normal or abnormal, you really need to look at the correlations between the numbers of receiving message and the numbers of received message. And these are the type of errors we see most frequently in console logs. And our feature construction and our machine learning algorithm are trying to capture those kind of errors. The second insight is that although console logs looks like free text, it is actually very different from natural language. Because it's very constrained. Every single message in console log actually comes from some log printing statement in the source code. So by looking at the source code, we exactly know what can appear in the log. And here is the example. Now we start to talk about some details of each of the four steps in the methodology. The first step is parsing. So basic idea about parsing is quite easy. If you look at this sample log, as a human reader, you can easily guess the red part probably is some constant string, while the blue part is a massive variable. However, it's not easy for a program to guess this. Instead, a program can look at the source code where the log gets printed, and then it is much easier to generate a regular expression like this, or we call it message template, which can be used to parse this free text message. The parsing result contains two pieces of structured information. The message type, which is marked by the constant string, and message variables, in this case, DLP1, as well as its variable name and data type in the source code. This approach sounds simple. However, it can get much more trickier in object-oriented language. And in the paper, we discuss in the detail how we use type inference to handle these kind of complexities and achieve highly accurate parsing results from object-oriented language. So this parsing step basically eliminates most of the complexities to deal with free text messages. So we can work on the semi-structured text. And then it's much more convenient to create different kinds of features. There are many features that are application dependent. But in this paper, we only focus on those features that are, we believe, generally applicable to many different systems. And we only focus on those features that can be automatically discovered from the log. Here we have one example. We call it message chunk vector feature. Message chunk vector is based on some commonly reported information in logs, which is called identifiers. So identifiers are those variables used to identify objects. For example, your file names in your file system is an identifier. And maybe you report the username or user ID accessing your web server, that is also an identifier. Programmers just like to put identifiers into the log. And here is how we use identifier. This is again a simple, simplified version of Hadoop HDFS log. So by looking at this log segment, it is hard to tell what's going on here. But however, if we move those messages by identifiers, we can see it is actually two execution traces. One about block one, the other about block two. Those two traces are actually interlinked together. By the way, there is a good property of identifiers is that we do not really need to understand the semantics of identifier, what it identifies, but purely based on its statistics about such variables, such as how many distinct values they have, and how many times they appear, where do they appear. Based on these properties, we can very accurately determine which variables are identifier. So the first few steps of our feature creation algorithms becomes, we first automatically discover which variables are identifiers, and we move log messages by each identifier and create these kind of message execution traces. The last step of feature creation is trying to build a numerical representation of these execution traces. We use a very simple vector representation, which is very similar to the widely used bag-of-word model in information retrieval. So here is an example of how this thing works. So this is just the example we showed on the last slide. And for each of the group or each of the As a Hilbert space, we create a single vector. So each dimension of the vector represents a single message type. Well, the values of each dimension represents how many messages of that type contains that particular identifier. For example, if the second dimension of the vector represents the receiving message type, and we have two receiving messages for BLK1, then we have two for that particular space. And we have also, similarly, we have two receiving messages for block 2, so we have a 2 here. We do the same thing for received message type. We have 2 for block 1 here, and only 1 for BLK2. Then we go up for each message type and complete this message count vector. Notice that this message count vector is the standard numerical representation, which can be readily fed into your favorite machine learning algorithms, whether it's clustering or it's classification, those kind of any algorithm. In this example, in this talk, we only give one example, which is anomaly detection. So anomaly detection is a very important algorithm to use in log analysis problem, because our assumption is that a production system, most of the times, is running correctly. And when the system is running correctly, it generates some normal log messages. So, what we really want to find is abnormal messages or unusual messages that match best indicate the problems. So, anomaly detection algorithm we use is a statistical algorithm called principal component analysis or PCA-based anomaly detection. The intuition behind PCA algorithm is that PCA captures the dominant pattern of all the message count vectors. And we can separate out those dominant patterns from each of the message count vector, leaving only the abnormal part. So the abnormal part will stand out and it's much easier for people to see. We want to understand that the patterns PCA captures are really the patterns on the correlations among dimensions of the message count vector. And remember, each dimension of the message count vector represents a message type. So it really captures the correlations among different message types. So coming back to our example about the easy received message. So the one-to-one correlation between these two message types are actually captured here by these two dimensions in the message count vector. And then PCA can detect abnormal correlations, so it can correctly detect those kind of missing message cases. So this is some information about PCA anomaly detection. And before we get into details of backstep visualization, to quickly review some of the PCA detection results. Our experiment data are collected from a 203 nodes Hadoop cluster running on Amazon's EC2 cloud computing environment. We run some standard MapReduce jobs, such as sorting, such as text search, on this system for 48 hours. And during this experiment, the HDFS, that subsystem alone, print out over 24 million lines of free text messages. And those data accounts for over 500,000 HDFS blocks. So remember, for each HDFS block, there is a block ID, which is identifier. And for each identifier, we create a message count vector. So we have over 500,000 message count vectors. Not surprisingly, most of these message count vectors are really the same, because again, the system is running correctly most of the times, and correct operations generate normal and safe message count vectors. In fact, there are only 680 distinct vectors. In order to evaluate the detection result, we manually label each of the 680 distinct cases. Our labeling is done by studying Hadoop code, talking to Hadoop developers, and reading other reports. So we try to label each vector as normal and abnormal. Also, we want to learn why it is normal or abnormal, and we write down the reasons. We want to emphasize that this labeling process is only for evaluation. Our algorithms do not take into account these labels, so it remains unsupervised and automatic. Here are the manual labels. We find 11 different kind of anomalies, and the numbers there are the number of occurrences of each kind of anomaly. And comparing this number of occurrences in the manual label to the number of occurrences detected by the PCA algorithm, we show that PCA can successfully detect over 99% of all the anomalies. Most of these anomalies are really performance anomalies, affect performance, but do not cause system to down. And except for the first one, which implies a bug in HDFS that might reduce the level of replication for certain blocks. And the details about each of the anomalies are described in the paper. So PCA does give two different kinds of false positives. So from the number of occurrences of such false positives, you can see these are fairly rare events. However, they are marked as false positive because from an operation point of view, these are just expected operations. It just happens so rarely in the system. We believe no unsupervised algorithms can really detect such cases. So in our current work, we are trying to improve the result by allowing operators to give feedback to the system and tell the system what alarms they don't want to see so the detection result can continuously improve. So there is only one remaining question about PCA detection in that. PCA is a black box algorithm. So it tells you which vector is normal versus which one is abnormal, but it absolutely provides no explanation about why it's normal versus why it's abnormal. And this is sometimes confusing to the operators, especially people who are not familiar with this PCA algorithm. So what operators do understand is they do understand rule-based systems because they have been using that for a long time. So what we are trying to make these PCA detected alarms into some kind of operation rules so operators can understand and they can get more insight out of that. So we build this decision tree. So decision tree is a data mining algorithm which tries to find the most discriminating dimensions of the vector. That means, in this case, that means the message type that is most important to tell whether the execution trace is normal or abnormal, and it stores all the message types by this order. This is how to read the decision tree. In the blue box, it's a message type. For example, the first one says red block receives exception. If you see, the decision tree tells us if you see more than one of such messages, the entire execution trace is an abnormal one. So this is, if you don't see this, then you probably need to look at other message types. This is pretty much like the manually written rules, and it is very intuitive because if you write something that fails, then it's definitely an abnormal case. However, there are something more interesting in this decision tree. For example, this third line says, got exception while serving the block. Counterintuitively, if you see that message, it is actually a normal case. So this is also a warning message with exception, but it indicates normal case. This is indeed a correct decision, even though it's counterintuitive. Because whenever the client, HDFS client, stops reading from the server, this exception is generated on the server. It actually shouldn't get into the log, because this is just expected operations. But some developers decide to put that into the log, and this message caused a lot of confusion to the HDFS users, and we see many discussion threads on HDFS bug report saying that why I'm seeing so many exceptions. We do not get any confusion here because we do not even look at the semantics of warning or exception. Our detection is purely based on the frequency of such message type. This kind of message just appears so frequently to be detected as abnormal. So this is the introduction of our four-step methodology. And we only show one case study which with HDFS, and there is a complete other case study in the paper which is called Dark Star Online Game Server. You can take a look at that if you're interested. And here is our future work. So in the parsing step, we want to eliminate the requirement of having source code because some operators says having source code is very tedious in the production system. Instead, we want to extract the message template directly from program binaries, and our current work shows some promising results on doing that with Java bytecode and Linux binaries compiled from C++. We also want to support more languages, especially those scripting languages such as Python and Ruby. On the problem detection side, we want to allow online detection so the system, so operators can notice problems whenever it happens. Also, we want to analyze logs from multiple applications or multiple layers in your application together. So, for example, if your MapReduce job failed, you want to know if it's a problem with your job, with the MapReduce framework, with HDFS, or with the underlying Linux logs. Since each of the components generates their own console logs, if we can analyze those logs together, we might be able to tell which component is to blame. And this is a summary of what we did. We used machine learning to detect problems from console logs. And in order for the machine learning to work, we need to capture those important information related to problems in a numerical representation called features. And in order to generate features, we have to do the parsing to handle the complexity to deal with free text messages. As a last step, machine learning algorithm, because operator says machine learning algorithm is difficult to understand, we have to add this visualization step, which helps to make the decision tree and help operators to understand the result. And this four step methodology is fully automatic, we do not require instrumentation and any manual inputs. As some final words, we want to say that machine learning algorithms are becoming more and more important to solve system problems. And for system people, it's not only important for us to understand some machine learning algorithms, but it's more important to leverage our domain knowledge about systems and to create those features and expose those features to the machine learning algorithms so these algorithms can work better in system problems. So here's my talk, and if you're interested in this project, I'm doing a live demo of this four-step methodology at tomorrow's poster session, so welcome to drop by. And thanks for your attention.
Hi, I'm Qiang Fu from Microsoft Research Asia. It's a very good job, and my question is, since your feature vector is about identifier, so I want to know the coverage of the identifier and detection of your algorithm. Most applications have many identifiers, right? And in your paper, you can automatically detect the identifier. So I want to know what is the accuracy of the
So the question is, if the log contains multiple identifiers, how the algorithms work? So what we do is actually, if the log contains multiple identifiers, we do the grouping step, feature creation step, and the detection step based on each of the identifiers. So fortunately, in HDFS, the only identifier is block ID. And in the paper, there is a Dark Star game server. There is
I believe there are many identifiers.
Okay, so in many identifier case, so we do the algorithm for each of the identifiers, and some identifier might, you can detect some problems based on the grouping of certain identifier, while you do not detect any problem based on other identifiers. Because this is the beauty of the fully automatic approach, so you only require machine time, so you can do extra work, even though this works are wasted, and do not detect anything.
Okay, another question is that, how do you know, for the same identifier, you can have many values for you, in your slide, your example is such as value 1, value 2, and but how do you know the different values of the identifier correspond to the same identifier variable? I mean, for example, in this case, you can construct a massive count vector according to BLK1 and BLK2, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But in fact, BLK1, BLK2's feature vector should be combined together to do PC, right?
So your question is, how do I ensure there are the number of dimensions in this vector for the same?
No. Okay. My question is, how do you know the BLK1 and BLK2's feature vector must combine to do the PCA, right?
Sorry,
let's
take
it offline.
Okay.
So, Ethan Miller, UC Santa Cruz. If you go to slide 10, it looks like you guys were very good at recognizing most things. Actually, it was like slide 11. It's where you listed how well you did each job. The funny thing was that I got that 3/4 of your identifications were on item number 7, where you have 74 there and 25 for the rest of the 11 cases, which is actually pretty good. What was odd, what was different about number 7 that caused such a high miss rate in terms of detecting the anomalies?
So number 7 says trying to delete a block, but block just didn't exist anymore in the data node. In that specific case, it is really some. So there are multiple, so the numbers of each dimension are large. And those large numbers, those large numbers can be arbitrary because one block can be written and read multiple times. Because of those large numbers, there are some kind of errors in those correlations which are not captured by the algorithm and tolerated by the PC algorithm. But however, if we try to examine those log segments, these are abnormal. So this is what happens. Why? There are some kind of messages we can discover, whether the other things we cannot.
Okay. Just a real quick follow-up. How common do you think this is in other systems besides looking at HDFS? Is this a common kind of problem, or is this a very rare kind of problem? Do you have any sense?
We believe this kind of HDFS has these problems most severely because every write to the block, every reading to the block is given in the logs. In other kind of systems, those kind of reading are not so like error prone process, so people don't put them into logs. So those method parameters are much more loose. Similar. So in this case, we have 680 distinct ones. In other systems, we only see one or two, so that's why we didn't show that in this paper.
It's on your idea from me, but you did say here about the paper, you mentioned that to make the tool work, you had to change the default login level of GovStar and change it to the final login level.
Yes.
So my question is that how do you know what's the right login level? The level that has necessary and enough information for your tool to work. So do you have to try all of the login levels and choose the best one, or you have a heuristic for that?
Okay. So the question is, why do I turn on debugging login? Which if we have to turn on debugging login to determine the problems. So this really depends on what kind of problems you want to detect. So if you find there is problems in your system, like backstar, there is whenever the workload is high, there is a lot of hard-working transactions. If you want to detect those problems and you analyze the logs, that's not there. Then you turn on more logging. So that is typical practice. Even if you do many instrumentations, if your instrumentation doesn't capture an error, you have to do more instrumentations. So that's the same thing. Here.
There's also another problem here. In my experience, it happened to me when I turned on the final login level, the performance of application dropped by a factor of 2 or 3, and the block that used to show up didn't show up anymore. So, what's your solution for this kind of problem?
So, you are talking about those kind of Schrodinger bug or Python bug, those kind of things. So, if you turn on some instrumentation, it doesn't appear. So, I don't think those kind of logging can solve these kind of problems. But one good thing about the logging is already built in. So if we use default level logging, it equals to no instrumentation.
But you mentioned that change default level.
All right, yeah, so in that case, we cannot deal with such cases. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
expensive. So I think in your model, your assumption is that the system should run normally for some time and then some problem happens, so you start seeing some anomalies. So I'm wondering if like I want to add a new feature and I wrongly implement a feature, would you be able to detect the problem if the new feature is incorrectly implemented in the first place?
You mean if we can detect other problems with new features?
Oh, so in your model, you assume the system should run normally, right? And then in the middle of something wrong happens, so you start seeing some anomalies.
Right.
But if I want to add a new feature on the system, but I implement the feature incorrectly, and so on the start, the system is not behaving.
Oh, I see. So this is basically a kind of different versioning of the software. So we currently don't have a different versioning. So each time you deploy a new version, you need to completely retrain the log parser, and then we generate some kind of message converters, and then retrain the PCA model. So that is how we handle the new versions.
Tim Gunn from University of Illinois. Really nice work. And you talked a lot about how you can use your tool to detect errors. And I'm wondering if another part of the problem is that once the error happens, how to diagnose it. And this is often very time consuming, especially given in the distributed system environment. You have multiple components. I'm wondering, based on your experience, for example, these errors, how much information does your, for example, visualization thing can offer to the programmers or developers and help them to quickly diagnose the errors? And what kind of future works that you think that you can extend your tool to help more in error diagnosis?
We believe, I guess the first step is really capturing what kind of errors or what kind of problems you want to detect in your system. And the next step is trying to help people to get insights of this problem. So how operators can look at those anomalies? So it's just like the WER work in the previous talk. If we have those kind of data collected, and then we can get to prioritize all the works which kind of problems to debug first, and then based on those kind of logs and monitoring information combined together, if the operators have some insight about the problem, they can provide better bug reports to the developers. So we believe really fixing the bug still requires some kind of expertise from the developers.